This is your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, the provincial government is shelling out more money for med student spots at UBC, and there may be a light at the end of the tunnel at the civic strike. We'll have all this, plus arts, sports, and your five-day weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. But first, today marks the beginning of our annual CITR fund drive, and our goal this year is, like any year, to keep CITR on the air for another 25 years. It's hard to believe it, but CITR has been on the air for 25 years. We're a non-commercial radio station, and we air music and programs not heard anywhere else in Greater Vancouver. It's a great place where students, amateurs, or anyone can express their creative ideas through radio. And we broadcast online at CITR.ca, and we recently launched a podcasting service, which is really changing things around the station. And our programming has generated praise from listeners and media observers all across the Lower Mainland. So all we're asking of you is our dedicated CITR listeners is that you help us out a little bit. We've accomplished this for 25 years with very limited resources and funding, but we need listener support to continue our work. So you can contact 604-822-8648 or 822-1242 or visit www.citr.ca/donate to just help us continue our work that we're doing here. And we hope to hear from you soon. But on to the news. Advanced Education Minister Murray Cole was at UBC today to present this year's class of 256 first-year medical students with white lab coats. Cole's gift was part of the government's celebration as they fulfilled their promise to double the number of spaces for first-year medical students in BC. As of this year, the province is funding 256 first-year spaces in UBC's Faculty of Medicine. The program is being delivered in collaboration with UVic, the University of Northern BC, and all health authorities across the province. The province has also increased the number of student spaces in other health programs this year, including nursing, which has been allocated 326 new spaces, showing an 82% increase since 2001. Other programs include radiography technicians, medical laboratory techs, residential care attendants, and home support workers who will also receive provincial funding for additional spaces. Now with a look at other local news, here are Leanne Yu, Carrie Baptist, and Rita Farkas.
In a workers' bulletin to the Canadian Union of Pacific Employees, claims that the strike should be over around Thanksgiving. According to QP, mediator Brian Foley will be meeting with the city during the weekend and will give his recommendation on Monday for a settlement. Foley was appointed mediator by both sides in September and last week was given broader powers to create a settlement recommendation. Unions have committed to giving his recommendation a membership vote immediately.
Firefighters were called to West 4th Avenue early this morning to battle a three-alarm blaze that tore through the popular pub Bimini's Tap House. A local garbage truck driver was first to spot the flames and immediately called authorities around 7:30 this morning. Although the fire was under control by 9 o'clock a.m., traffic on 4th was blocked from Arbutus to Burrard until early this afternoon. Although the blaze destroyed much of the building itself, no injuries were reported and neighboring businesses suffered little damage. Investigators are focusing on renovations that the building was undergoing last night as a possible source for the fire. The kitchen, they said, had already been ruled out. Bimini's owner, Peter Urim, was saddened by the loss of the building, which was built in 1910, but he is hopeful that Bimini's will be back in business before 2008.
And staff with the Faculty of Medicine at UBC say the newly constructed David Strangway building is making them sick. Employees from the Department of Family Practice say the temperature inside the building is between 33 and 35 degrees and that vile odors are being vented into their office from restaurants located below. Dr. Bob Woolard, head of the Department of Family Practice, says that employees are missing an average of one day every 2 weeks due to illness. Staff are complaining of problems such as headaches, dizziness, nausea, and trouble concentrating as a result of the working conditions. A recent WorkSafe BC report on the building revealed only half the required amount of oxygen was present and that windows on the building reflected light inward, creating a greenhouse effect. WorkSafe BC ordered the UBC-owned private developer that manages the building to address the problem. A consultant has been hired to deal with the issue, but the problems still persist.
Vancouver Councillor Peter Ladner is proposing that TransLink create a network of rental bicycles to complement its bus and SkyTrain services. In an effort to relieve traffic and ridership congestion and make the streets of Vancouver cleaner and quieter, Ladner is proposing a system similar to that of Paris and Amsterdam. The plan would see a number of bicycles stationed around the city that could be used by riders for a small fee. Ideally, the program would be firmly in place before 2010 so that Olympic tourists could also benefit from the program. Ladner said the plan would provide people with another choice as he presented his motion to the TransLink board earlier today.
Arsonists set fire in Stanley Park over the weekend. At about 6 p.m. on Saturday, a hollow tree was set on fire near Lover's Lane. This is the third suspicious fire to be set in the jewel of the city over the past 2 weeks. Vancouver Fire Captain Rob Jones-Cook believes the three fires are connected. He adds the fire department knows how the fires are being set. Fire officials have not released the methods due to concern of copycat arsonists in the area. However, police don't know who is responsible for the fires and what the motives of the arsonists are. As a result, fire police and park board officials have increased patrols in the area.
The BC Health Coalition has recently received a letter, leaked from Deputy Health Minister Gordon McCatty, announcing the provincial government's intention to contract out to more private clinics. In the letter, which was sent to private health clinics across the province in July, McCatty requested that the facilities send the government information on their operations so that they could help the ministry, quote, explore further opportunities for innovative private sector involvement. Leslie Dickout of the BC Health Coalition says that the letter clearly states the government's intention to contract out to private clinics, despite their noted interest in what citizens envision for the future of healthcare in British Columbia. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Did you just say live music?
CITR 101.9 FM Radio is presenting the biggest live music event of the year, better known as
Shindig!
Come out, enjoy some drinks, and watch specially selected local talent artists break out a new, fresh variety of tunes.
The show will be held at the Railway Club every Tuesday from now until the finals on December 4th.
Show starts at 9:30 p.m. Railway Club located at 579 Dunsmuir Street on the corner at Seymour. This week's bands include Gunshay, The Petroleum Byproduct, and Winter Mints.
Ooh, it's the place to be.
Heard about CITR's second annual funding drive? It's a great way to help out the station that keeps you posted on all the latest independent and underground local musical talent. Now's your chance to donate and keep us on air for another fantastic year of lyrical melodies.
Donations will go towards new equipment and regular upkeeping of our radness, which ultimately transcends back to you, the listeners, in form of sweet music.
Call our line between October 1st and the 14th and donate a piece of your heart
and wealth.
Note, your donations will get you some free CITR stuff.
Yeah! That means t-shirts, hoodies, bags, CDs, a friend's card, and more.
Wow! Reach us at 604-822-8648. Once again, that's 604-822-8648.
You totally love this radio station.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:12. This morning, a prominent BC Provincial Court judge and First Nations member was sworn in as the 28th Lieutenant Governor of the province. With more on that and other stories, here are Rita Farkas and Leanne Yu.
British Columbia's 28th Lieutenant Governor was sworn in at the legislature this morning. The ceremony integrated Stephen Point's Aboriginal heritage by including a First Nations drummer. Point brings many varied experiences to his new job as the Queen's representative, a formal tribal chair of the Stolo First Nations. He got his start in politics at the age of 23 when he was elected chief of the Gaokal First Nation. Point also practices law in the province. He has worked as a provincial court judge since 1999. Premier Gordon Campbell said that Point has advocated for First Nations throughout his career, pressing for greater recognition of their contributions and their fuller involvement in all aspects of British Columbia life. For his part, the new Lieutenant Governor pledged to continue this work in his new role, using his post to be an advocate for reconciliation between First Nations and non-natives.
And the Canadian Council of Chief Executives has issued a report today calling for serious action on climate change. The report suggests that climate change is the, quote, most pressing and daunting, unquote, issue the world is facing today, and says that Canadian businesses must take part in mitigating the problem. The task force from the council is calling for a national action plan which would have governments, businesses, and individuals working together to reduce greenhouse gas emissions substantially. The CEOs say they recognize that the cost will be significant, but say that it must come from all sectors. They also say industry needs to do more to reduce emissions. The report includes suggestions such as investing in technological innovation, which it says is the best way to spur cleaner technology and reduce emissions. The authors note that the technology funds being proposed by the federal and Alberta governments are particularly critical incentives that industries need to control for their emissions. The CEOs also suggest government intervention in the way of an emissions trading system. This would allow companies to participate in a market-tradable permit system. They say this is an attractive option which could be worked out fairly. The report follows the release of Quebec's controversial carbon tax on energy companies today. Quebec's new tax system is the first of its kind in Canada.
The Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation is expressing concern over products sold with its signature pink ribbon logo. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which means consumers will be able to find a variety of pink ribbon products that claim to raise money for cancer research. But Director of Development Mark Hierley of the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation is asking consumers to think critically before purchasing the products. Not every company selling the goods disclose exactly how much of the proceeds go to breast cancer research. Hierley encourages shoppers to ask themselves who the program benefits, how the organization uses the money, and if the program is meaningful. Barbara Brenner of Breast Cancer Action adds, companies put pink ribbons on products to help them sell. If consumers have any questions about the pink ribbon products they are purchasing, they are encouraged to contact the foundation directly.
And CSIS and the RCMP have recently admitted to members of the Air India Inquiry that they need more money in order to combat terrorist financing. The admission came Monday during testimony of RCMP Superintendent Rick Reynolds. Reynolds testified that in the 6 years since the federal government enacted legislation to put an end to terrorist fundraising in Canada, only two people have been charged under new laws, yielding no convictions. The lack of action is due to the lack of funding and personnel provided by the federal government, a problem that has plagued several departments of both the police and intelligence agency in the post-911 era. The $2.8 million originally allotted to Reynolds' department could only hire 17 staff members compared to Reynolds' requested number of 126. Jacques Shore, a lawyer for families of the Air India victims, says it was devastating to the families when they discovered that Ottawa had not begun to address the issue of terrorist fundraising in Canada until after the September 11th attacks, but says that Reynolds' testimony now puts the onus on the Conservative government to fix the problem.
The U.S. is threatening more sanctions be placed against those who target civilians or block UN-led peace initiatives in Sudan after an attack on the Haskanita base in Darfur this weekend. The U.S. ultimatum follows the deaths of 20 African Union peacekeepers at the hands of rebel factions after an attack on the base, representing the worst loss for the peacekeeping group since their mission began in Sudan in 2004. State Department spokesperson Sean McCormick stated that financial bans or travel restrictions may be placed on the members of the belligerent rebel factions who are responsible for what he calls a block to the political process. McCormick also called for the immediate deployment of an additional combined force of 26,000 UN and African Union peacekeepers and urged all parties to fully participate in the peace process. Since the conflict began in 2003 between the Arab government and non-Arab militias of the Darfur region, an estimated 200,000 people have been killed and another 2.5 million displaced from their homes. In other international news, Egyptian courts are cracking down on newspaper editors for what they say are false reports on the state of the president's health. FSRN's Ursula Lindsay reports from Cairo.
In the last 2 weeks, 7 Egyptian newspaper editors have received prison sentences ranging from 1 to 2 years. The convictions have worsened already tense relations between the country's government and its independent press. At a meeting of the journalist syndicate in Cairo last week, supporters of the condemned editors chanted slogans criticizing the president and calling for freedom of the press. All of the editors who have appeared in court work in Egypt's independent or opposition press. This press has been busy in the last few years, breaking what were once called the red lines. They've published articles criticizing President Hosni Mubarak and his son Gamal, who many in Egypt believe is being groomed to succeed his father. Ibrahim Aissa, the editor of Al Dustur, has been one of the fiercest critics of the Mubarak government. Aissa was one of 4 journalists sentenced earlier this month on charges of defaming the president. Today, his trial on another charge begins. Aissa's paper was one of many that reported on recent rumors that 79-year-old President Hosni Mubarak was ill. Mubarak has ruled the country for the last 26 years and has no vice president. Now, Aissa is accused of spreading rumors that disturbed public security and damaged the public interest. The accusation says the rumors made the Egyptian stock market fall and led to the loss of $350 million. Aissa faces 3 years in jail. He spoke at a press conference recently.
The independent press raised its voice as Egypt's conscience and provided a model in the last few years. It lowered the president from his position as a pharaoh or a god and made him a human being to whom we can say no and no and again no.
Dia Rashwan is a well-known political analyst. He says the discussion of the president's health addressed a widespread, genuine concern among Egyptians.
Egyptians were really very concerned about the destiny of their country. Till today, the NDP, the ruling party, never declared who will be the candidate, despite also that the health of the president is not very well. And you know that the president in this country, historically and in the actual time, playing central role. It is not a marginal position, it's a central one. Everything in the hands of the president.
Part of the reason for the crackdown, says Rashwan, is that the ruling establishment can't agree on who should succeed the president. Some support his son, but many don't. In the meantime, public discussion of the matter doesn't seem to be welcome. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ursula Lindsay in Cairo.
And thanks to FSRN for making that piece available to us for rebroadcast. It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Jeff Sargent will give us a recap of this past weekend in UBC Athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Now wait a minute. You know you make me wanna
shout, shout.
Yo, on Tuesday, October 2nd, 2007, CITR 101.9 FM and the UBC AMS presents That DJ Competition at the Pit. And we want you to spin. So here's the download. It's quite simple. 8 DJs play 15-minute sets each with a minimum of 3 genres of music to keep the party popping. There are no restrictions on what audio sources or what musical style the DJ chooses to use. DJs must bring their own music and needles and provide their own transportation. The equipment provided will be properly functioning, professional, quality equipment. Interested? Then send your demo to That DJ Competition, CITR Radio, 233-6138 Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1. Along with your full name, emailing address, mailing address, home, cell phone number, your musical style, and audio sources used. MySpace submissions are also accepted. Please send them to thatdjcompetition2007@gmail.com. For more information, please visit our website at www.citr.ca or email thatdjcompetition2007@gmail.com.
What is that? I know what that is. That's music.
For $15, the Friends of CITR card scores you in-store discounts at Beat Street, Red Cat, Vinyl, Scratch, and Audio Pile. Support Vancouver's finest indie radio station and pick up your card today.
What do you want to do with your life?
I want to rock.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:24, and it's time for Thunderbird Eye on Sports with Jeff Sargent.
The Thunderbirds football team dropped their second game in a row Saturday as the Saskatchewan Huskies defeated UBC 19-16 at Thunderbird Stadium. The game was the first-ever start for UBC quarterback Mark McVay, who has been bumped up on the depth chart to replace the injured Doug Goldsby. McVay had a tough start on the rain-drenched field, with only two completions in the first half. But a stellar defensive showing by the Thunderbirds bought the rookie pivot some time, as the score remained 5-2 in favor of the Huskies late in the second quarter. With just under 4 minutes to go in the second, UBC defensive back Alex Betts picked off a pass by Huskies backup quarterback Lawrence Nixon, giving the Birds possession of the ball at the Saskatchewan 16-yard line. Three plays later, the Thunderbirds took the lead as Dave Boyd ran the ball into the end zone.
First and G, McVay steps back, gives it to Hobbs. He's got a touchdown! UBC is on the board, even more so. Put it up there. It is now 8-5. The T-Birds got the lead.
But the lead didn't last long as the Huskies scored a touchdown of their own with just 20 seconds left in the half as the Birds entered the break down 11-9. The third quarter didn't start well for the Birds either as a fumble by Boyd gave the Huskies the ball in UBC territory, leading to a second touchdown and a 9-point lead. But McVay finally started to find his game late in the fourth, completing three consecutive passes, including a 17-yard touchdown pass to Townsend.
Here we go, McVay stepping back, goes to the air, he's got a man! Touchdown, T-Birds!
The score brought the Birds to within 3 points with 1:35 remaining on the clock. Kicker Sean McIsaac attempted the onside kick, which was recovered by the Huskies, essentially ending the game, dropping UBC's record to 2-3, good for a tie for the fourth and final playoff spot with the Alberta Golden Bears. UBC head coach Ted Govaya says it was just a matter of too many mistakes leading to the loss.
Penalties hurt us at key points and things that happen that you're not going to win a lot of close games by doing some of those things that we did. And, you know, the interception at the end of the first half that led to points. I mean, we got to be able to execute better than that. And, it's going to be a growth opportunity for our quarterback and get a chance to see what he did wrong and hopefully clean it up.
McVay finished the game 6-25 for 98 yards with one touchdown and two picks, while Huskies starter Brett Thompson finished 9-15 for 172 yards. UBC defensive lineman Shea Emery led all players with 11 tackles and says despite the disappointing outcome, there's no need to panic just yet. The Thunderbirds now must prepare for Shrum Bowl 30, which will be held this Saturday at Terry Fox Field out at SFU. The Clown currently sit dead last in the Canada West with an 0-5 record and provide UBC with a good opportunity to rebound in the standings. Kickoff for the Shrum Bowl is set for 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon and can be heard right here on CITR. The women's soccer team finished the weekend with a tie and a draw on their brief tour of the Fraser Valley. Friday's tilt had the defending national champion Thunderbirds take on the first-place Trinity Western Spartans. All-Canadian UBC goalkeeper Jackie Dunnett played her season debut Friday after sitting out the entire month of September with a shoulder injury. The Spartans struck first as Christine Walker scored in the 11th minute, and the score remained 1-0 until the 69th minute when UBC striker Kristen Zoller tied the match. The Spartans had a couple of glorious chances late in the game, but the ball couldn't find the end of the net as the Ladybirds held on for the draw. Saturday, the Birds took on Fraser Valley and handily beat the Cascades by a 4-0 margin. The third-place Ladybirds now host both the Spartans and the Cascades this coming weekend. The men's soccer team split their home-and-home series with the Victoria Vikes, beating their provincial rivals 2-1 on Friday on the island, before the Vikes edged the Birds 1-0 in Saturday's rematch at Thunderbird Stadium. The match remained tight and scoreless until the 90th minute Saturday, when Victoria's Sam Wingham found the back of UBC's net. Thunderbird's head coach Mike Mosher said the field conditions made for a tough match and knew it would likely come down to one goal, but the way it happened, he said, made it a bitter way to finish a hard-fought battle. The Birds now sport a 3-4-1 record, tied for fourth in the Canada West with Lethbridge. The Birds have a week off now before traveling to Alberta to take on those Pronghorns as well as the Calgary Dinos on the 14th and 15th. The women's field hockey team played to a couple of draws with the Victoria Vikes on the weekend, gaining no ground but not losing any either on their cross-water rivals. The Ladybirds sit 3 points back of the Vikes for first in the Canada West and travel to Calgary this weekend for a two-game series against the still winless Dinos. The men's hockey team finished their preseason play with a couple of wins over the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology. The Birds put up impressive offensive numbers, beating Nate 6-3 and 5-3 respectively. Saturday's game had UBC head coach Milan Dragicevic sit several veterans, including Daryl May and Brad Zanin, as a younger roster still got the job done. The Birds now turn their attention to their regular season opener this Friday, as UBC hosts the perennial powerhouse Alberta Golden Bears for a two-game series. Both games can be heard right here on CITR, with Friday's puck drop set for 7:30 at the Winter Sports Center. Former UBC basketball star Kelsey Blair is going pro. She's going to Sweden this week to start the season with Eskilstuna. Blair says she'll likely see players with a wide range of skills.
I could be very well be playing against WNBA players. I could be playing against NCAA players that played in those, you know, the big games with all the people. So that'll be a really kind of exciting thing. As for my team, I suspect, from what I've seen having traveled before and from what I know about them as a team and sort of Sweden as a league, the caliber will be a little bit lower. They're younger, so a lot of them are, you know, 18, 19. They come through the club system, and this is kind of the top of that club system.
Blair graduated last year after winning two national championships with UBC, a national tournament MVP, as well as a CIS Rookie of the Year award. She says if things don't go well, she will return to go to graduate school next year. And finally, the women's volleyball team has returned from their University of Regina Invitational Tournament, where the Ladybirds won four of their five matches to finish out their preseason play. The Birds now have a few weeks off from the competition before opening the regular season against the SFU Clan on October 24th. That's your Thunderbird Eye on Sports for this Monday. I'm Jeff Sargent.
And thanks for that, Jeff. And Jeff brings up another good point. Just to reiterate, the CITR funding drive starts today, and we have some of the most comprehensive varsity and high school sports coverage of any campus station. We've been supporting and promoting UBC athletics and athletes in the Lower Mainland for almost 25 years, and we do live and remote broadcasts to, you know, get out there and cover more events in the community, but with doing that comes more money for equipment costs. So what we're asking is that you help keep CITR sports coverage on the air, and you can call 604-822-8648 or 604-822-1242 or visit www.citr.ca/donate in order to keep us going for another 25 years. And before we go tonight, we're going to wrap up with Carrie Baptist and your 5-day weather forecast.
Looks like weather this week is going to continue to be rainy and cloudy with a high of 15 degrees and a low of 8 degrees on Wednesday and Thursday with showers continuing. Friday, though, should look a little better. We should have some sun mixed in with the clouds with a high of 13 degrees.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Carrie, and that's our program for October 1st, 2007. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts, and if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcotto produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Comley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.